In this episode, we take a look at startups in Turkey. 2021 is shaping up to be a great year for the country, with two different companies, Getir and Dream Games, reaching unicorn status in just the first half of the year. This is Betatron, Investing in Asia, a podcast for people who want to invest in Asia's future. We're talking about Asia outside of China, where 44% of the world's population lives. They are young, they're digital natives, and their buying power is increasing by the day. I'm your host, Arshad Chowdhury, a partner with Betatron Venture Group, based in Hong Kong. Here to help us understand the startup scene is Esrarnur Kagan, a Dutch-born entrepreneur and investor of Turkish descent who lives in Istanbul. Esra has studied e-commerce, economics, and management at the Saxion University and has a master's degree from NYU. In the past decade, as an operator and investor, she has won many accolades and awards, including Most Successful Investor in 2015 in Istanbul, Turkey, and Most Successful Businesswoman of the Year for 2012 in Amsterdam, Holland. Esra, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Let's start with an overview of Turkey and why you think now might be a good time to invest in Turkish startups.
There are 83 million people living in Turkey with an average age of 33. Market-wise, it's the sixth largest market for Instagram and the third largest market for Twitter. Turkey's strength is gaming. We had Peak Games, we had Grum Games, and now Dream Games. So they're all billion-dollar companies, if not close or more than a billion. They're all exited to major players such as Zynga, and they went global. So gaming is huge. And the main reason for that is mobile penetration is high. There are a lot of young people. The average age is very young compared to many other countries. So gaming is big here. And the second market is, as you also guessed, you just mentioned Getir, which is doing so great globally. But it's just one part of the e-commerce part. So we have Trendyol, who just valuated $16.5 billion. They were acquired by Alibaba. But you have Hepsi Burada, we call it Hepsi. They just IPO'd at the New York Stock Exchange. So these are all retailers, e-retailers, and they're like Amazon. And Amazon doesn't have a strong foothold in Turkey because current competition is just too strong. The last mile delivery, grocery delivery part. And you have, of course, you have Getir, but you have İstegelsin, which is backed by a holding company, Ülker. They're the third largest cookie manufacturer in the world. And they came with an e-grocery app. That comes out of Turkey in a very traditional market. So that's very interesting. This market is so big that you have e-commerce, you have groceries. You also have startups that only deliver a certain vertical of your grocery. So not only 10-minute delivery time or the hour delivery time, there is also a startup that only deliver drinks. So only all your drinks, they deliver it. And they're growing really fast. I think after Getir, we're going to have a couple of more. The world is going to hear about a couple of more grocery and retail, e-retail startups from Turkey.
That is really exciting. And tell me a little bit about the availability of technical talent in Turkey today. What's it like to hire people? And what do you see in terms of average compensation for example, a full-stack developer in Turkey in U.S. dollars?
Yeah, it's a little bit difficult now because we have larger technology companies who have offices here in Turkey who can offer higher salaries. You can hire a full-stack developer for anything between $1,000 to $2,000 a month.
That is still way lower than in many other markets like in the U.S. When hiring people, is it your sense that Turkish employees today are keen to get equity in startups, or are they still focused on their base pay?
What I see is that employees that are key personnel, so first employees within a startup team, they prefer to get stocks as well. But later on, the second batch of hirees within a startup, you don't see that quite often.
When it comes to your perspective as an investor, what are you looking for in terms of local Turkish companies? Are you looking for companies that can be local champions, or are you looking for companies who plan to sell to other markets, like expanding to the US or the rest of Europe? Do you have a preference?
We take companies who are in early stage and who show all the signals of becoming a local champion, but also have global aspirations. The Turkish market is big. I mean, like 83 million is big, but you can't compete in Turkey or in this region with only the 83 million that you have here. A second reason is that the Turkish lira is really dropping really fast year over year. So you have to grow faster than the Turkish lira is dropping if you only stay in Turkey. That's the biggest risk here in Turkey.
And along those lines, do you have a preference for where companies are domiciled as corporate entities? Like, do you prefer them to be Delaware C Corps or Singapore-based companies?
For us, it really doesn't matter. We prefer companies that are in the Eurozone, the U.S., or Turkey. These are the companies that we understand the law system, the corporate, the tax system. So that's our preferences. But a company from Singapore isn't that complex either because it's a business hub. But China would be something that I wouldn't prefer, to be honest, because it's so far away from us. That's where we put the limit. And it's pure because it's difficult for us to understand.
And in terms of the funding that's available to Turkish founders today, are you seeing any gaps in the market? Is there a lot of funding available at later stage versus earlier or vice versa?
So what we see is that in late stage, there is a lot of funding because the risk is very low. And there are many investment firms in the US and in the EU that look into the Turkish market and are willing to invest in late stage rounds. So late stage isn't a big problem. Early stage, there was a huge problem or shortage of funding for early stage startups. And the main reason for that was that there were not a lot of VCs in Turkey who invested in early stage. But that is solved now. And in the early stages, very early stages, so idea stage and seed stage, you have 16 angel networks only in Istanbul. And then you also have many other angel networks in the rest of Turkey. So you have a lot of young business people or older business people who are interested in the Turkish startup ecosystem who are backing the seed and ID stage.
So we're seeing the markets heat up all over the world. It really does seem like it's a very founder-friendly market for fundraising. Is that the case in Turkey as well? Are you finding companies are able to raise funds quickly and sometimes at higher valuations than they might have raised in other times?
I think valuations are not as high as I think they should be, mainly because of the Turkish lira aspect. So valuations are through the roof in the US, EU are a little bit on the higher end, but I think valuation in Turkey could be higher.
In the US in particular, there's a real emphasis today on improving diversity and fairness in the workplace, particularly at startups and making them a more inclusive environment. Is there a similar movement in the cultures of the startups in Turkey? And zeroing in, what is it like for women in the Turkish startup scene?
On the part of the woman, The founder of Trendyol, the $16.5 billion company, is a woman. The founder of Hepsi Burada, that just IPO'd on the New York Stock Exchange, is a woman. Grom Games, two founders, both men. But Peak Games had, I think, four founders. One is a woman. So there are many very, very successful female founders. There are many female investors. Of course, it's not 50-50, by the way, but there are a lot of women. They are there. They're very successful. And I think mainly because of that, it's not a big topic in Turkey. Like, should we get more women in? Because the most successful entrepreneurs from the last couple of years are women. So that's actually a great signal. How is it to do business in Turkey as a woman? I think kind of like the same as the rest of the world. Sometimes it's more difficult, I guess. And sometimes it is more easy. You're in a male-dominant environment, and sometimes you have to be a little bit stronger in your character than you would like to be, maybe. That's how I see it on a personal level. But I never felt like different than my male colleagues. So, no, it's actually a very woman-friendly environment.
For the international investor who may not have ever invested directly into a Turkish company, are there pitfalls or challenges that they should be aware of that might be different from other countries? And if so, what might those be?
Of course. So I think it's a similar pitfall that I faced when I moved here, and I have Turkish heritage. So I thought that I understood the culture here, but I didn't. It's really a mix of Asian and Middle Eastern and European culture. And that's where you sometimes can struggle. It looks a little bit chaotic, so there is less order, but there is order in that chaos. And because it's such a big machine, 83 million people living here, you can't bend the machine. You have to adapt to it and develop your strategy according to the Turkish market. So you need to have a really strong localized team. You can't implement a strategy that you had for Germany. You can't implement it for Turkey. That's for entrepreneurs. And the same counts for investors. So what I would advise investors is to co-invest with a local investor. And that's a strategy that many investors have. But to pinpoint something specific, you spend a lot more on advertisement here in Turkey than in smaller countries such as Europe. So you need more funding. So the rounds, they look smaller, but you should calculate that you need strong follow-up investments.
In terms of your own fund and your own investment thesis and firm, tell us a little bit about what you guys focus on. What stage of companies, what do you typically look for? And are there any sectors that you are excited about?
We have two funds. One of them is a smaller fund where we invest in fintech startups, marketplaces, retail, so the grocery vertical. But we also invested in an e-scooter company. So traditional technology. Our ticket size there is between the $50 to $250K. Sometimes we go up to $500K. And we like to invest with either local or global investors, but we like to invest with strong investors. Our second fund is, and that's the new fund that we just closed actually, is we invest in frontier technology. We invest in technologies such as lab-grown meat, lab-grown diamonds, energy, battery technology. And these are all verticals close to our holding company. Our holding company is in many traditional businesses such as energy and textiles and food. We try to be a strategic investor for frontier tech startups there. There, the ticket sizes are much larger. As you may know, frontier technology needs more funding in the early stages already. Valuations go up very fast. So there we invest somewhere between $500K to $2.5 million.
Are there any particular investments that you've made in either of the funds that you'd feel comfortable talking about that you're particularly excited about?
Of course. I mean, we're excited about all our startups, but I'm mainly excited about the lab-grown meat startup that we invested in, mainly because you see that plant-based meat and lab-grown meat is accelerating. The customer is getting more adapted to this new product, and you create a more green footprint for the world without slaughtering animals. I was born and raised on the countryside in Holland, and we had this large factory where they process meat. So I saw it happening when I was like very young. So I'm really happy that we can invest in something that is good for the human, good for the planet, and good for animals. So I'm very excited about that one. And the second one is that's two brands. That's also a startup that we have that is doing the last mile delivery for groceries. They set up their own retail channels and they're growing into Germany now. So when I said Getter is not going to be the only startup that you guys are going to hear about, this is one of them that I meant. So I'm super excited about them. It's such a strong team. They're all from P&G and Unilever. So they exactly know how to scale and grow brands, advertise them. And I'm very excited about what they're doing.
Speaking of sustainability. Something I ask all of our guests is about climate change, and specifically accepting the fact that climate change is here already in the form of heat waves, wildfires, storms, and displaced people. How might climate change impact Turkey and its startups? And what opportunities might there be for VCs to help deal with the changes that are already upon us?
Maybe you heard about the wildfires this summer in Turkey. That's a direct consequence of climate change. It's too hot. It's not raining. It's really a big problem. They didn't really manage the wildfires well, and that's pure because it was a terrain that you can't get in with just firefight trucks and stuff like that, and it's a big terrain. So we saw that there was so much space for technology to develop there for these kind of causes. So I think that that's an impact, and that's something that you can offer here in Turkey. Next to that, I spoke to the governor of Istanbul, and we spoke about a couple of problems that we faced here in Istanbul the last couple of years. And one of that is fresh water supply. So because of lesser rain and lesser snowfall, there is less fresh water for a city that houses 20 million people. That's insane. 30 to 70% of tap water gets lost on the way to your house. And that's an average all over the world. So we spoke about how can we solve this problem? How can we better the infrastructure without digging the whole infrastructure out and renewing it? So this is Turkey, but it's the same for the rest of the world. I think as investors, we all have a responsibility to get money on the places that will secure us a greener and cleaner future.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think venture capital, with the emphasis we have on rapid adoption of the solutions that we are supporting, is particularly well positioned to finance the types of changes that we need to see at the pace that we need to see it. So yeah, I'm looking forward to over the next decade seeing more VCs looking deeply at both sustainability and adaptation and solutions on those fronts, even if those aren't purely asset light. I think we will have to look at the physical problems of the world and come up with physical solutions and find ways to creatively finance those. Well, this has been really great. I would love to just ask you if there's anything that we've missed, if there's anything you would like to leave as a message for folks who might not be as familiar with the Turkish market.
It's a great market to invest in. And I'm happy that I chose to invest in Turkey instead of like Holland. It's challenging, but when you succeed, we're talking about crazy valuations. I just mentioned 16.5. She's going to the 20 billion. So when you do it right, and venture capital is about risk, taking a risk and getting high returns. Sound a bit like an advertisement, but I truly believe that.
Yeah, I guess if you didn't really believe it, you wouldn't be investing in the country, you wouldn't be living there, you wouldn't be all in the way you are.
Yeah, and people who listen to this podcast, they can reach out to me. You can find me on Instagram or LinkedIn, Twitter. I'm very happy to help out, share deals. We don't see as many deals as some of the funds because we have a specific focus, but I'm always happy to connect with global investors or entrepreneurs as well.
Okay, great. Well, we will include your social handles in the show notes so our listeners can reach out to you. Esra, thank you so much for your time today. And I look forward to looking at deals alongside with you, potentially getting on some cap tables with you and investing in Turkey alongside you guys.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening today. If you want to know more about Betatron, where we invest in fast-growing B2B startups throughout Asia, visit our website at betatron.co. I'm your host, Arshad Chowdhury. Find me on Twitter at ArshadGC, where I'd love to hear your ideas about guests and topics related to investing in Asia.